I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard. Today, the City Market is a culinary destination. It's a place to shop for produce from local growers, grab some meat from the trendy butcher, or have a seat at any number of popular restaurants. Brown and Low is nice and open, very sleek, kind of an East Coast vibe, the kind of place you'd go for oysters. The Bite is a hipstery sandwich joint that puts sriracha in its sauces. The Farmhouse is known for making use of all the market's bounty, not just on dinner plates, but in artisan cocktails. When Charles Ferruza moved to Kansas City in the 1980s, the City Market was very different.
If you were looking for a live chicken, you could find one.
Most of what was here, restaurant-wise, was basically comfort food, greasy spoon-type stuff. And the breakfast counter at Casconi's was an institution. The old-school diner went out of business about a year ago, and in its place, another diner has opened up, Estelle's Diner. So, still a diner, but one that advertises grass-fed beef in the burgers. Perhaps a compromise between sentimentality and change. Charles is skeptical.
Not everyone, including me, loves grass-fed beef because it tastes grassy. But then again, they've got burgers, fries, and shakes. So there's something to be said for, an all-day breakfast.
Well, should we check it out? Should we go there?
Yeah.
Charles and I went for lunch on a sunny weekday, and it wasn't very crowded. In fact, we probably saw more people out on the sidewalk than we did inside. But the interior has gotten quite a spruce up. It's pink and white striped with red trim. Everything feels super clean. And yet, plenty remains unchanged. The open kitchen with counter seating, really the whole layout of the space.
I don't remember the pink and white wallpaper, but I love it. It looks like an ice cream parlor.
The menu still has all the staples that Casconi's regulars really liked.
Pork cutlet, beef tips and noodles, hocks and beans, ham hocks and beans, hamburger steak, chicken parmesan. Those are all great classic diner dishes.
There are a few minor tweaks in addition to grass-fed beef. Our server, Anna, explains.
Everything now is made from scratch, homemade, organic.
It's sort of Anton's signature.
It is.
That's Anton Kotar of Anton's Tap Room in the Crossroads. Estelle's Diner is his second restaurant here in town. Estelle is his daughter. Charles and I both love diners. And it turns out we have the same standard order in a place like this.
I'm going to have a grilled cheese on rye and french fries.
I have the exact same order. Could I get pickles on mine?
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
Oh, gosh, me too.
I
want pickles on mine, too.
Great.
While they grill our sandwiches in the kitchen, we keep chatting with Anna about the switch from Casconi's to Estelle's.
Did all the customers stay with you?
Some of them have, some of them haven't. You know, it's a lot of people think we're closed.
Yeah. You know, Casconi's used to do fried chicken on Thursdays.
We
do you
still
do
that?
It? Oh, yeah. Amen.
Gina,
that was the best fried chicken I have had in Kansas City.
Officially the best?
Yeah. It was deep, crunchy, and light, not too greasy, just right.
Do you feel like sort of you're walking this line between creating a new place and also living up to people's memories?
Yes. Yes. And, you know, and Anton, he doesn't want to recreate Casconi's
right.
again, which I totally get. But a lot of our regulars, that's what they want.
Right.
So you're walking the line.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I can tell you, I mean, Casconi's was a place I fell in love with when I moved to Kansas City 35 years ago. And I never wanted it to change, ever. Ever.
What did you like to get at Casconi's?
Mostly, I loved the Italian breakfast. You know, with the Italian toast, it's crunchy, soft in the middle, crunchy, thick crust. I don't know if they did that for everyone, but for me, they would bring out the tomato sauce with my eggs and the bread and the hash browns. I mean, I like to have the full ride of Italian food because that's what I grew up eating, and I need my periodic visits to nostalgia land.
There were quite a few regulars.
Oh, very much so. And especially on Saturdays. Saturday mornings, they'd be lined around the block.
But change is inevitable. That being said, Charles notices a familiar face when he looks back in the kitchen. George Casconi, the grandson of the original Casconi and the son of the most recent owner. He still works here, and he plans to keep at it for a few more years.
Would it be possible for George to come to our table for 2 minutes?
Sure.
I want to ask him about his grandparents. Yeah.
George stops by to reminisce.
My grandparents came in here. They opened up in about 1930. They had a little restaurant. I started as the busboy and peeler and chopper of all the onions, the garlic, potatoes, and all that.
I ask him about change in the city market.
It's changed drastically. If you go behind there nowadays in the market, behind the market building, and it's all nothing but restaurants instead of produce guys and such, you know, it's a lot of competition out there.
George goes back to the griddle, and Charles and I eat lunch.
Taking a look across the dining room and seeing George Casconi in the kitchen, there's something very reassuring about that.
In one more reassuring detail, the sandwiches are perfect. Two grilled cheeses with pickles, one for Charles, one for me, gooey with cheese and buttery crisp rye, classic diner fare served just like you'd expect. The only question really is, do the people heading out for lunch in the city market still want that? Back in the studio, that's my question for Andrea Broomfield. She's a food historian who teaches at the Johnson County Community College, and she's written a book on the story of food in our city. Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
Casconi's, which used to have lines out the door, as Charles was saying, just couldn't quite compete in today's city market. Does that capture something bigger?
I think that he's absolutely right, and you are too, that the nature of the market has changed drastically. And when George Casconi is thinking back to the time that he remembers in the 30s when he was, I guess, a busboy, that market was really...
I should say, I don't think he was a busboy in the 30s. It was at his father's iteration of the restaurant, yeah.
In that time period, the market was really about trying to feed the wholesalers. It was about trying to move product into people's stores and grocery stores. And I think the market was feeding a lot of the people who were working there. So greasy spoons and all-night diners were satisfying the needs of people who were coming in from quite a ways away in order to get set up to go to work before dawn to sell the product that they needed to get out wholesale.
When would you say the market itself, as in the farmers market, people selling their wares on weekends, when would you say that the renewed interest in that whole aspect of the city market really had its renaissance, really spiked again?
I think that the city was losing money on the city market in the early 1980s, and it had to change. And I think that when you decide that you're going to begin to offer vendors product as retail, that's going to start bringing in customers who are looking to buy, for example, produce. But it also is dovetailing with a renewed interest in the importance of fresh local food, organic food. So you're coming out of the 1970s and people have become somewhat disenchanted with the fact that they can buy strawberries in January under fluorescent lights. And so they begin to seek out fresh local produce, and the market begins to take off. By the 1990s, the city market is really, I think, rejuvenated and has become an increasingly popular place to buy.
So then the restaurants that have grown up around it, that is newer. That's like
right.
a second, that's sort of the second wave of change in a way.
Right.
And I'm curious whether you think of that as part of the draw of the market itself, a desire to be close to a synergy with agriculture, or is it about real estate, pure and simple, farmers market or no?
Well, that's a really complicated question. And so I can give you some basic answers to that. I think that people do love the synergy. They love to be around fresh food. But I don't think people cook like they used to. And so maybe you have people who are going to the farmer's market and they're buying things that they can eat out of hand, like, for example, cherry tomatoes or fresh strawberries. But at the same time, they're into restaurants and they want to have that food prepared, preferably from local producers, but they might want to be able to order it off of a menu in the form of a salad that somebody else has done, or a craft cocktail that's using the various aromatics that come from somebody who's selling herbs.
And so, like, you might want to enjoy a nice seafood dinner at a beachside restaurant. You might enjoy your artisan cocktail with muddled mint or basil.
Right.
Adjacent to the city market.
Right. Preferably from Crumb's Heirloom. So I definitely am not saying that people don't cook. But I think that our culture has become more interested in fresh prepared food that's affordable in a really cool place. And that would be, to me, the city market.
What do you see as, like, if we step back in time, the earliest history of the city market, as in that specific location, as a produce market?
So the whole reason that the city market exists where it does takes us all the way back to John Calvin McCoy, who was looking for a way to cut having to go to Independence to get supplies for his provision store out in Westport. And he located, obviously with help, a rock shelf that existed at the end of what today is Grand Boulevard. But it was called Market Street back in the time, because he arranged for a steamboat from St. Louis to drop off for him the provisions that he then took to Westport. And over time, that landing, Westport Landing, Town of Kansas Landing, ultimately became the feature for Kansas City's market. And so where our market is today is really not very far away from where that shelf is at the bottom of Grand Boulevard, as it would have looked 50 to 60 years ago. I mean, it's been transformed into a riverfront heritage park, but we're very close with the city market to the original locations of provisions drop-off.
What do you see as the major milestones in the history of that spot, food-wise?
Well, Santa Fe Trail is very important to that spot, food-wise. And then from there, the area around the River Market, Columbus Park, was always, in Kansas City's history, a place where new immigrants settled. It was a lot of tenements and a lot of crowds of people who were just starting out in Kansas City. But a milestone would be the Italians who began to immigrate en masse, particularly from Sicily and southern Italy in the 1880s and 1890s. And even though a lot of the men were working on the rail, the women wanted to work closer to home, and they had already an affinity with agriculture from where they were. And they really began to utilize the city market in ways to sell vegetables and fruit from barrels. And they became very successful. And the next thing you know, the men are joining the women. And I think we owe a lot to the Italians for the longevity of the city market, particularly the farmers market part of it.
And there are still vestiges of that piece of the history that are appearing to thrive still, the little deli in the corner of the city market.
Carollo's.
It's also an Italian market.
Yes.
And then there's the sausage place a couple blocks away.
Yes. So there are vestiges of that history still today and thriving. And I know when I'm in culinary classes at JCCC and we're teaching cuisines of Italy, one of the most important things we do is get down to the city market in order to bring back for our classes these cheeses that are really difficult to find elsewhere in Kansas City. So producers that date back some generations are still keeping that essence alive. But you also have, after the Italians get their foothold, you then have the Vietnamese who seek refuge in the United States during the Vietnam War, and they settle in the old Columbus Park area, and they too then get a foothold, culinarily speaking. So you still have the Vietnam Cafe, for example, that is an institution in Kansas City. And so that area is...
And there's also a Vietnamese restaurant in the market itself.
Precisely. So if you know the history of settlement patterns in that area, you can appreciate, I think, more some of those businesses that line the actual stalls that are in place year-round.
At this point, there are farmers markets in every neighborhood just about. Mm. And you can get food labeled local at a lot of grocery stores. You can join a CSA, mm-hmm. have farmers drop off your produce on a subscription basis. And grocery delivery overall is getting more popular. Does all of this change that's happening now have potential consequences for the whole market model?
I don't know. I think that the market model that relies on a very industrialized global system is not going to go away, because people are so accustomed to being able to have what they want when they want it that there's always going to be strawberries in January, from my perspective. But I think that the city market and the farmers market in particular has done a lot to educate people about the importance of supporting local farms.
And also, I mean, it's also a destination,
yes,
aside from food.
I think it's the sixth most popular tourist attraction in Kansas City.
I do a CSA with some farmers who used to go to a farmer's market in town every Saturday, and that used to be the pickup. Now they go to one of their relatives' houses here in town to do the pickup there. And it's because they told me they were losing money at the market because they're a small operation. So the just two people losing their whole day on the farm to head to market with produce that may or may not sell wasn't worth it to them, whereas the CSA drop-off is worth it because that's guaranteed purchases. They can turn back around and still work their fields in the afternoon. Right. Hearing their story did make me wonder whether these markets are good for farmers.
I think that the CSA system has been a lot better because the people who subscribe, for you example, or me, I mean, we're invested in somebody's farm, and we're willing to take the risks of a poor harvest, for example, just as we're willing to share in the bounty. And when a vendor comes into the market and they're just hoping for the best, it can be difficult to sell all of the product at the end of the day. But when
you don't just leave it on the grocery
right.
store shelves for tomorrow's customers, you're heading back to the farm with it.
Right. But when you look at how Instagram and Facebook has allowed these farmers to create a relationship with the people who are regulars at the city market, then they do feel more of a sense of, okay, I know that I can count on these customers because they come every week. So I think social media has really helped in some ways for vendors at farmers markets to at least have a better sense of who their customers are.
What do you see as the role of the city market in our food community today? Is there an important kind of continuity with the past?
I think that the more people know about the history of Kansas City food, the more they're going to see that continuity. Absolutely. And I think that when you have restaurants like Farmhouse who are featuring on their menus where their product is coming from, and you can look out and see that that product is just from three blocks away, that's a wonderful synergy.
Andrea Broomfield, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Andrea is the author of Kansas City, a food biography, and she's working on a second book. So if you do head to the market for farm fresh produce, what better way to showcase it than a fabulous salad? Better yet, go out for a salad and let a chef do it for you. Our food critics will join us with recommendations in a minute. Call 816-235-2888 to chime in. This is KCUR's Central Standard. We're back with Summery Salads. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and the food critics are here to recommend great salads on Kansas City menus. So if you have a favorite that we need to know about, call 816-235-2888. Full disclosure, we are evaluating salads like we'd evaluate anything else on a menu. It's got to taste good, and not just for a salad. It's got to taste good. Period. 816-235-2888 with a salad that fits the bill. Our critics this morning are Mary Block, Jenny Vergara, and Carlton Logan. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So what are we seeing in salads right now? Popular ingredients this summer, novel approaches. Anyone have observations?
Well, the classic summer salad is tomato and mozzarella, and I don't think that'll ever go out of style. Nor should it.
Absolutely.
I think there's a lot more ancient grains being kind of incorporated. And it's, again, back to the bowl concept. So you'll see them on the menu, not necessarily on salads, but they'll be bowls, but they'll eat like a salad. But with, you know, quinoa or farro or, you know, other ancient grains that kind of add a bit of chew to it. So,
you know, I'd like to start this recommendation session with each of you describing a salad that's made your list. But I want it to be the one that's to you, the pinnacle of saladness. Like what every salad should strive to be if you are in charge of salads from here on out. Explain what it is that makes this salad so quintessentially salad-y to you. Jenny?
Okay. So my salad would be the Kale Caesar at Brick and Mortar. It is the picture that I used on my social media to promote the show this morning. And it's actually, what I love about it is that it does have a bread element to it, which I think is kind of important, if not on the side, somewhere incorporated. It's a long baguette that's kind of cut like a crouton, and then it's formed into a bowl. And inside of this crouton bowl, if you will, is rubbed kale with this lovely Caesar dressing. Everyone knows kind of the garlicky, lemony, anchovy flavors that are involved, and they rub the leaves to make them tender. So the kale doesn't stay super crunchy, but it's not, you know, a soggy mess either.
And okay, I want to talk about the rubbed kale thing because kale, I used to hate kale. Uh-huh. And then I found out about that you're supposed to massage it, which seems super high maintenance. Mm-hmm. Like there are other greens that do not require
this
a massage
true.
First, but it does make a gigantic difference.
It makes a huge difference. And it changes, you know, it does make those ingredients kind of come together and meld in a way. And it wilts the kale just a bit, just enough to where it's more, eats more like a really nice butter lettuce.
And it takes out some of the bitterness.
Yeah. And then there's a couple of anchovies.
It's weird, but true.
Just kind of laid on top of this salad. So it's beautiful to the eye. It's got citrus in it, which I love. It's rubbed so that the leaves are tender, but yet the kale is still kind of good for you. And a little bread element kind of tucked in there somewhere. So that would be my go-to.
So the Kale Caesar at Brick and Mortar. Mm-hmm. Mary?
I have too many. I'm thinking
I know.
About this.
I can feel the passion for salads from your list.
Yes. It is my go-to. I love salads. I would say that North, out in Leawood, has a quintessential salad that has all the elements that I look for. It's their seasonal salad. And right now it has kale, roasted cauliflower, clementines, dates, avocados, farro, raisins, quinoa, goat cheese, almond, and sherry vinaigrette. So it's got some greens, it's got some grains, it's got the sweetness of some of these fruits, and then it's got a lovely cheese and a really nice vinaigrette.
Yeah, and so I'm wondering, you may not be able to answer this, with the vinaigrette, is the date part of the vinaigrette?
No.
Interesting.
It's chopped dates, which I am really into right now for salads. I was somewhere where they had them with the roasted Brussels sprouts. I thought that is such a great combination. And it really works well with this salad and really any grain salad.
Okay. This sounds amazing. It's a salad at North. It's their seasonal salad.
Yes.
It's Mary's quintessential salad if forced to choose. It's a hard
right.
choice. Carlton?
I have to say that on this panel, I'm probably the person who is not as excited about salads. So
you deserve representation.
Yes, yes.
I do think
like
you represent
salads.
A lot of people out there.
I do like salads, but they're just not my to-go-to on the menu. I do like at Summit Grill the fried chicken salad. It is greens, these strips of fried chicken, cheese, tomatoes, bacon, and a honey mustard dressing, and it kind of forms this mountain of greens and the fried chicken going up the mountain of greens, and it's very good, and it's a nice presentation.
You know, I have not ordered a salad at Summit Grill in some time, but I did order one there once, and this was a while ago, but it was, I would say, there's someone there who is inspired.
Yes.
Somebody is salad inspired.
Yes. Visually and also taste wise.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Okay. 816-235-2888 to join this conversation about great salads on Kansas City menus. Mary, talk to me about the carrot and avocado salads on your list. That's plural. The combo sounds delightful.
It is. And it's based on a salad that Jean-Georges in New York started at ABC Kitchen. And now everybody is replicating it, cheating with it, whatever.
Wait, what do you mean?
Copying it.
Copying it. Yes, they're not cheating. It is, but it is a great combination. You've got roasted carrots, and then you've got the avocado, which is really soft.
So it's roasted carrots. It's not like the grated carrot French salad.
No, it's roasted carrots, which brings out the caramelization, really adds a lot to it. Black Dirt has a wonderful riff on this with the carrots, avocado. They typically have orange, as this one does, cilantro, olive oil, lime, and a little pimento. And
Dang, that sounds good.
It's really good. And I can make a meal out of it easily. Corvino Supper Club had a when they first started, and they've put it back on their menu. And it's one of the most beautiful ones you'd ever seen. They're coins of carrot instead of the long strips of it. And he adds habanero and mint as well.
Hmm. Ooh, okay. So then, Mary, I want to stick with you just a second to talk about salads that showcase specific ingredients, because I'm seeing this farmer's salad at Happy Gillis on your list, and it's got, do I remember this right, spring peas.
Yes.
Which are very in season right now.
They are. And Abby Joe at Happy Gillis has a farmer's salad, and it's whatever they get in from the farmers. And right now they've got spring peas, asparagus. It's comes with arugula. It is an arugula salad and ricotta, and then a preserved lemon dressing. So it's really bright and light.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the story of vegetables that many of us first experienced canned that are being rediscovered in their fresh state as a whole other thing. I would say the pea is having its moment.
The pea, as a spring pea, when it's really bright, is just outstanding. There's so many things you can do with it. A canned pea, not so much. I'd say that about green beans, too.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the farmer's salad at Happy Gillis. Jenny, you've got a spinach and apricot salad here, and this is also, I would say, the seasonal moment for stone fruits. I am sure the salad is delicious right now.
This is dried apricot that's in this salad. Oh. I'm talking about
I take it back, but I'm sure it's good anyway.
No. It's Mildred's Coffee House, basically. And they've I'm talking about their newish Crossroads location. They have another location downtown. But I love the redo of that space. I think it's so cool to be in there. But they have a salad that is spinach and apricot, and it's flat leaf spinach, hickory smoked bacon, sunflower seeds, dried apricots, green onions, and Parmesan cheese, and it's tossed in blue cheese dressing. And can I just tell you, like, I might sell my son for blue cheese dressing. I really, really have always loved blue cheese dressing. So, and theirs is a really good one, nice and fresh. So there's a creaminess to it. There's a hint of fruit. There's a, you know, little bit of green onion, little bite of onion. I love everything about this salad.
Carlton, you have mentioned on your list a classic that Mary has hinted at, the Caprese at Jasper's. That one features mozzarella and heirloom tomatoes.
Yes, I think we all three agree about the Caprese salad.
Hear, hear.
Jasper's is very special because they make the mozzarella cheese tableside. So you actually see the process of making mozzarella cheese, buffalo mozzarella cheese, not like we see on a pizza or something like that. And the combination of the really soft mozzarella, the heirloom tomatoes, the balsamic and oil, it's just...
And basil, right?
And basil, yes.
And there's some theatrics to this presentation.
Oh, sure. It's called Mozzarella Theater, to be exact.
And are there any other caprese salads on anyone's lists? I neglected anyone's caprese?
I haven't seen anyone else doing it, but I'm sure.
You know, I think he's the only one who does the theater, but in a few weeks when the heirloom tomatoes are more plentiful, there'll be specials on everybody's menu.
We're not quite into tomato season yet.
Mm-hmm. Is that kind of the weirdness of this year's season, or is it always kind of more July?
It's more July.
Yeah, it's more summer, late summer.
So, Mary, I think several of your favorite salads come from the Russell.
Yes.
Which I think of perhaps unfairly as a very meat and potatoes place. Am I just wrong?
Can I tell you you're wrong?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Of course.
Yes, you're wrong. they do such a great job of roasting vegetables. They even roast pears or grill pears. They've got the most gorgeous wood-fired grill, and it makes most of the components for the salads and sandwiches that they have on their menu. I love a roasted root vegetable salad. And, you know, if you do it in the oven at a high temperature, it's very good. But when it comes out of that oven, it's really spectacular. They have a roasted root vegetable salad with wild greens, roasted sweet potatoes, beets, arugula, pistachios, goat cheese, and a really nice thyme molasses vinaigrette, which has a touch of sweetness to set off all those vegetables. They also have a steak and green salad. So they grill the steak, they serve it with chimichurri sauce, which is an herb and olive oil dressing, some of those same grilled vegetables. And that, I love the combination of steak and salad. And then finally, the green pear salad. You know, pears and apples, any kind of fruit goes so well with a fresh cheese, whether it's blue cheese or a goat or feta. And they have one that also adds candied walnuts, dried cherries, and a bourbon pear vinaigrette.
Yum.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with any of them.
You have one of those Russell salads is a steak salad. You've got another steak salad on your list at Ryan the Plaza. I am generally impressed by all the meaty salads on everyone's lists. Carlton's got this fried chicken salad he already mentioned, also a spicy Thai salad. Jenny's got a steak salad on hers. Tell me about these salads, guys, and the particular skill of making a meaty salad.
Well, the hanger steak salad that is at Rye is, you know, they have wonderful meats there, and they grill it to order, and then they serve it with blue cheese, and I think that's such a great combination. Greens, they have fingerling potatoes, and then just a light balsamic vinaigrette, and it just is a great combination.
So it's sort of like your steak dinner on a bed of greens.
Exactly.
I don't think it's too surprising, though, that Kansas City has steak salads on the menu. I mean, we are a meat and potatoes town to begin with, and so what better way to eat your vegetables than to put a little steak with it? So I think that makes perfect sense. I'm recommending actually a steak salad from Room 39 on 39th Street. It's only available on the lunch menu, and it's a hearty entree salad. I mean, this is a full meal for sure, but it's basically got slices of grilled butcher tenderloin, arugula, beets, roasted beets, pistachio, and Weeby cheese, which is a local cheddar cheese, and then a red wine vinaigrette on top of all that. And it's delicious. It's like having your steak and salad mixed together.
Carlton, we've already heard about the fried chicken one, but what about the spicy Thai salad?
So Twisted Fresh is one of my favorite places to go because everything they make is very fresh and has very fresh flavor. And the spicy Thai chicken salad started in a wrap. And they decided, well, hey, why don't we just take the wrap off and make a salad? And so they mix it with some greens, or you can get it with quinoa and make it sort of the bowl concept again. So I like the combination of, and to be specific, it's a spicy Thai slaw with the chicken, cheddar cheese, pepper jack cheese, pico de gallo, and sriracha honey aioli.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you guys, we're going to dive back into the rest of your list, but can we talk just quickly about dressing and its relationship to the salad as a whole? I'm going to confess a bias. I am anti-dressing on the side.
Why?
Okay, well, so
let's start there.
Yeah. Let's start.
I love making salads, and I have a technique that has developed over time that I think has influenced my expectations of a salad and also my ideas about dressing. I'm not just like a randomly anti-on-the-side Nazi. Like, honestly, that's not my intention when I say that. But, okay, so when I make a salad, making the dressing is like where a lot of the joy in it is, and it's making specifically vinaigrettes. I don't make a salad with all the ingredients and then toss on a vinaigrette. I actually put the ingredients in the vinaigrette and let it sit for a while. Mm. And the reason is that in the way that like a soup gets infused with all the flavors, and so even though it's this jumble of things, there's something that kind of has a unified flavor about it. I use the vinaigrette that way. So if I I almost always put like halved grapes and green onions. And then it's just whatever else is seasonal, herb-wise, produce-wise. Some kinds of produce don't work sitting in a dressing for a while because they'd get wilty. I never put the greens in there. Mm-hmm. But when you take, instead of pouring the dressing onto it, I take the ingredients that have the dressing on them and infused in them out and put that in the greens and mix it all together. You don't risk overdressing, but there is something cohesive about the taste, and it is really the flavors of those fresh ingredients permeate the whole salad. So then this idea of like a pile of stuff now to me feels just like you're eating groceries. You're not eating a salad.
Fascinating. I've actually never heard of that technique. One of the other techniques that's really popular to not overdress your salad is to dress the bowl. You know, mm-hmm. pour your dressing just a little bit around the edge of the bowl and let it slide down and then toss your salad. But I love that idea of taking like your hard crudité, crunchable veg and letting it soak in dressing. Mm-hmm. I think that's amazing. But let's be honest, there's only two reasons that somebody orders dressing on the side with a salad. That's because they're either watching their weight and trying to be healthy, and so they want just a little bit of it to go a long way. Or it's somebody who's just a control freak and needs to toss their own salad, make sure it's the right amount of dressing and
I definitely
veg.
Don't mean to judge anyone salad preferences. But I do think that if you're talking about salad from a taste standpoint, it is, after spending a long time kind of like making salads, experimenting with making salads, it's hard for me not to see a salad that is either dressed last minute or on the side as a pile of produce, not a dish.
Well, you know, your technique, a lot of chefs, a lot of recipes will call for that. If you've roasted root vegetables or you grill potatoes,
right.
you toss mm-hmm. it in the vinaigrette when it's still hot and it absorbs the dressing much better.
That actually works with protein too. If you took a hot piece of steak off the grill and put it back in the marinade, if you're going to slice it and put it on your salad, it will infuse that meat.
Yeah, and I agree that just pouring a vinaigrette over mm-hmm. a salad can be a bit much.
And we're specifically talking about vinaigrette. This doesn't work with
ranch
or blue cheese. Anything creamy. No. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad that some of these feelings have been confirmed if deemed a bit strange.
She worked that out, didn't she?
Yes.
She got
thank
that
you,
worked
thank
out.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mary, I see from your list you are a beet fan.
I am definitely a beet fan. And I make beet salads at home, but I really love going out for them because I don't have to peel them and roast them and all that stuff.
Wear your gloves.
Yeah.
Stain your hand.
Which is why I often buy orange beets instead of purple.
We're going to get back to this conversation with Mary's beet salad recommendations. You can call 816-235-2888 to join us. We are looking for the best salads in Kansas City. Tasting good is the main criteria. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and the food critics are here on a hot summer day to recommend refreshing salads that are exceptionally tasty on Kansas City menus. Jenny Vergara, Mary Block, Carlton Logan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, Mary, we have teased that some of your salad recommendations have beets in them.
Yes, they do. The roots and fruits salad at Charbar is outstanding. And I know most people don't think to go to a barbecue restaurant and order a salad of any sort unless it's coleslaw. But this is fabulous. And it's got roasted beets, parsnips, onions, Brussels sprouts, and then it has goat cheese, orange, pistachios, and a blackberry wine vinaigrette. It's a very hearty salad and just excellent. And then also at Hogshead, they have a beet and burrata salad. It's got a whole ball of burrata, and it's got chopped beets around it with arugula, Swiss chard, pistachio granola, which is kind of fun. The crunch of the granola is a nice contrast with the smoothness of the burrata. And a lemon tahini dressing.
Ooh.
Very good.
I would love that.
Mm.
Carlton, you have on your list, in sort of a general way, places that are known for customizable salads, the Mix Cafeteria. Crushed Red, that last one I have not heard of before.
Mm-hmm. For those of us who kind of like a little bit more control, places like the Mix Cafeteria and Crushed Red allow you to go to the counter and either choose a salad that is already on the menu, or you can say, I want this, I want that, I want this, and this is the dressing I want. So I like those options. And there are a lot, especially with these three, where you can choose greens, you can use vegetables, quinoa, farro, whatever you want to put in there, and I like those. I do like at the Mix the Garden of Eden, which is Granny Smith apples, candied pecans, gorgonzola, and a champagne vinaigrette. And at Crushed Red, I like the South of the Border.
Tell me about the South of the Border.
South of the Border has avocado, tomato, roasted corn, cheddar cheese, and tortilla strips with a chipotle ranch dressing.
You do like a salad that's got substantial ingredients and many like strong flavors.
Flavors so are important, yes.
Is it Crushed Red an Italian restaurant?
It's not really.
I'm listening to everything. Your salad thinking that doesn't sound like an Italian salad.
No, they really have all sorts of things. It's kind of pizza and salads and
got it.
This sort of thing. Yeah.
All right. Jenny, you are also mentioning Cafeteria, their Hollywood Bowl.
So I have to tell you, if I am going to go and have a salad, I gravitate toward Cafeteria. It's also owned by Joe Marie Scaglia, who owns the Mix as well. Mm-hmm. And I prefer Cafeteria because I don't prefer to have the mix and match and pick and shoot. I'm like, oh my gosh, just make me a salad, please. Just let me point at something. So I want it done for me. And Cafeteria has a whole list of lovely kind of both salads and bowls on their menu. And right now I'm obsessed. It's the one thing I can't get away from. It's their Hollywood Bowl, which should surprise no one who knows me that I would like the Hollywood Bowl. But basically, it's got non-GMO tofu, which I love tofu, quinoa, spicy sautéed eggplant, which adds a ton of flavor and just a kick of spice, roasted sweet potatoes, avocados, charred bell peppers, local organic sunflower shoots, so just like a little microgreen on top, olive oil, sea salt, and then it's all tossed in this Thai ginger coconut curry sauce. Mm. Like, this salad is so extra. It's extra, extra. Mm-hmm. And that's me in a nutshell. So.
But also, it sounds like a salad that is both vegetarian and filling.
Yes, for sure. And I think this is actually on her bowl section. This is not on the salad section. So you'll have to look under the bowls. But it eats like a salad. And it's so filling.
What do you mean when you say it eats like a salad? Because I think this also brings us, as we near the conclusion of our hour, to the definition of a salad.
So it has to have more vegetables than grain, is my definition. There's so many bowls that are like a ton of quinoa at the bottom of the bowl and just a few things on top. This is more veg, quinoa as a suggestion, a condiment, if you will, inside the salad. So that's
and the ingredients prepared separately then assembled.
Yes. And dressed. Yes.
And dressed. So I agree. Dressed.
So the thing about this salad, too, is that it fills you up. Like, if you eat a salad like this, a nice, good entree salad, and it's all veg, it will take you as far as you need to go through lunch.
What about these True Food Kitchen salads on your list?
So I didn't know if I was going to love True Food Kitchen. I have to say, I'll just confess that up front because it just sounds healthy. And there's so many places in town that serve kind of healthier stuff that come with their own kind of religion that comes with it that I don't prefer necessarily. So it took me a long time. I finally went in a couple nights ago. I took a nice long walk at Loose Park and ended up in there for a salad. And I ended up getting two or three different salads just to try them and then took them home to eat them. And they were all perfectly dressed, fresh ingredients, organic ingredients for the most part, lots of herbs and greens and other vegetables, but the dressing itself was really good. So I'm recommending a few of them. The Cobb salad, the Good Earth Cobb salad is really pretty. It's kind of an assembled bowl, meaning it looks a little bit like a ramen bowl, how, you know, each of the ingredients are kind of stacked in their own pile on top of greens, which I love. It's vegetarian and gluten-free. It's got avocado, organic tomato, asparagus, watermelon radish, garbanzo beans, sweet dried corn, gorgonzola, and then it has a cashew poblano ranch dressing, which is just a suggestion in the background. But all of those things together, the plate is so beautiful. Like, talk about eating with your eyes first. This is the bowl for that. The kale salad is also good, but I've already talked about my love for kale salads. It's basically just a version of that. And then finally, they have a cucumber side salad that comes as an option for a side if you were to order an entree. And I have to tell you, that to me was the hero of the entire evening.
The hero?
The sight. So it's just a cold. And maybe it's because summer's here and I want good cucumber salads. Like I'm craving it.
Mm. Cucumber is hero. I love it.
Yes.
Yeah. So this has some coconut note to it. And I tried to get the recipe. I tried to like track down somebody who would talk to me about this side salad because it was so good. I thought I have to make this at home. And I think I've decided it either has a little bit of coconut oil or at least it has a little bit of coconut vinegar in it. Or maybe even a coconut agave.
I bet you can Google it and find out.
Yeah, there's a little sweetness and some coconut just in the background, but it's a dill dressing and it's just red onions and cucumbers and sunflower seeds tossed together. But that dressing,
sounds very bright.
Yes, I'm on a mission now. I'm going to find that recipe. So if you're going to True Food Kitchen and you're going to get an entree, please, for my sake, try that cucumber salad. And if you track down that recipe, you know who to call.
Mary, you are recommending a grilled romaine salad.
Yes, I love grilling romaine. It changes the not only the texture, but the flavor of the lettuce. Graham and Dunn has had this same salad on their menu since they opened. It's grilled romaine, hearts of palm, artichoke hearts, house-smoked bacon, and blue cheese, which is the star, and a cider mustard vinaigrette. And you eat it, romaine heart is whole, so you really need a knife and fork for it. And it's just delicious. The flavors and the ingredients all play really well together.
So this is a salad to get if you also are in the mood to cut something.
Exactly.
Pretend Which it's I didn't a piece mean to sound meat. So violent. I just meant it to more sound like someone sitting down to a big hearty meal with a fork and knife. You've also got we talked about your salads featuring beets. But can you talk to me a little bit more about the roots and fruits at Charbar?
Yeah, I just think having root vegetables as well as fruits are a great combination. So all those roasted vegetables I mentioned, and then they add the oranges and then the blackberry wine vinaigrette. It's just a really nice contrast.
Jenny, talk to me about the French Market Cafe and specifically their spinach salad. But I know you've recently written about this place and have generally sung its praises.
Yeah, so they've moved, basically. It's the family that owns Cafe Provence. They were in a small, tiny shop. They've now moved two doors down, and it's just a much bigger place. And they've added a full cocktail bar that serves wine and drinks, as well as like a little cafe area, and in addition to obviously all the other market things that they carry. So they're doing kind of, service right now. I think they close about 8 o'clock, so maybe not late night, but certainly kind of early dinner, lunch. Great place to stop for like your girlfriend and a glass of wine and a charcuterie board. They have a spinach salad there that I think is really good. Right now they've got it with blueberry, strawberry, asparagus, goat cheese, pecans, and a champagne vinaigrette. And so it's just a very simple kind of spinach and fruit salad, but it's just delicious and it hits the spot. And this place is really cute. Like they've really done a nice job with the decor, so I wish them well.
Does that spinach salad, is that a grab-and-go salad or is that a dine-in salad?
No, it's on the menu. You can dine in and get it. I'm sure they have a version to go. They've got a whole area of grab-and-go items there, so...
And what about Afterward Tavern and Shelves? It's not just any bookstore where you can also grab a salad.
Right. So Afterward's located in the Crossroads. They have a full cocktail bar that serves beer and wine as well. And their craft cocktails are really exceptional. They have some excellent bartenders in there. And then they have a whole section for books where you can shop for books. And we've seen a couple of these concepts now open up in Kansas City. They have a very small, manageable menu. This salad doesn't look or sound like much. But if you just want just a classic kind of green salad, it comes with ranch dressing. And I'm getting back in touch with my Oklahoma roots here because, ranch is something that I think our people, my people certainly invented. But this salad is literally
just the food of your people.
The food of my people. What can I say?
And your people being Oklahomans?
That's right. That's right. That's right. So it's got cucumber, it's got tomato, it's got radish, it's got some greens, a little bit of Parmesan, and then ranch dressing. And you can add chicken if you want to at night to make it more of a kind of an entree thing. But it's just a simple, crisp, refreshing salad. And I'm starting to get back in touch with my roots on ranch a little bit there.
And as we prepare to head out, we have not talked yet in depth about a Caesar salad. And Mary Block, you have a favorite?
I do. I love Lydia's Caesar salad. And it's hard for me to go and not get it. It's just got all the right components. The dressing is outstanding and it's not doesn't have too much anchovy. The bread, the croutons are made from bread that they have on the table that they toast up. The Parmesan, the proportions. It's just a great salad.
So Jenny started our convo with a basically deconstructed mm-hmm. Caesar salad, mm-hmm. and Mary has concluded it by putting it back together.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
How perfect. Our time is up. Keep telling us about your favorite salads on Twitter at KCURCST. If your recommendation didn't come up yet, we're compiling a list of the best salads in Kansas City. It'll be up online this weekend. You can get it at kcur.org. Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, thank you.
Thank you.
Mary Block of Around the Block, thank you.
My pleasure.
And Carlton Logan, writing about food for KC Food Guys, also an administrator of the Kansas City Eats Facebook page. So much fun.
Thank you.
That's a wrap for the day and for the week here on KCUR Central Standard. If you missed any of our shows, we've got great weekend listening for you. KCUR.org/Central Standard. The young filmmaker we spoke with about her TED Talk on Wednesday was especially interesting. KCUR.org/Central Standard. This show is produced by Melody Rowell, Chris Young, Ann Kniggendorf, and intern Riley Kester. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. And our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman. Over and out.